As the financial crisis and economic crisis deepens, working people are asking, how bad is it going to get and how will it affect me? To help us answer those questions, we're joined by Professor Noam Chomsky, who needs no introduction. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
A few weeks ago, on George Stephanopoulos' show, George Will said the following.
Surely in a democracy, it's time for us to quit being sentimental and say the question we settle in election is not whether elites shall rule, but which elite shall rule.
No, he could have answered.
Which was a rather candid moment to see on television. But if for people, ordinary people, working people in swing states now, where their vote might help determine which section of the elite is going to rule, should it matter to them?
Not only should matter, but does matter and has mattered right through American history. Actually, George Will is essentially correct in the terms of the framing of the way American democracy is supposed to work. James Madison, the main framer, his view, as he expressed it at the Constitutional Convention, was that a power should be in the hands of the wealth of the nation, the responsible set of men, of course, who respect the rights of property. And the goal of the government should be to protect the minority of the opulent against the majority. And that thesis runs right to the contemporary period. Perhaps the most famous exponent of it was the leading figure in American media, the leading public intellectual in the 20th century, Walter Lippmann, who wrote progressive essays on democracy. He was a Wilson Roosevelt progressive. His view was that the population should be spectators, not participants. He called them ignorant and meddlesome outsiders who have to be kept out of the political arena. And we smart guys who have to run things have to be protected from the trampling and the roar of the bewildered herd. That's you guys out there. On the other hand, the population has never accepted this, has always struggled against it. Jacksonian democracy is a famous case, but it continues. The benefits, the freedom, that we have now is because of popular struggles. The popular struggles in the 1930s compelled the government to create New Deal measures. In the 1960s, it led to civil rights, Medicare, welfare state measures, women's rights, and so on. Every single one of them was, if you look, is the result of people simply not accepting the doctrine of elite rule. And it's true today. You just take a look at polls. A spectacular 95% of the population, which is amazing for a poll, object that the government doesn't pay attention to popular opinion.
There's been sort of a traditional analysis, on the left, that there's a section of the elite that's more connected to the military-industrial complex, a section of the elite that's more connected to domestic economy, needs a more vigorous domestic purchasing power, and certainly overlap. Does that analysis hold up? And if so, for ordinary people, is it better to have one section of the elite in power or the other? I mean, right now, if you're in a swing state, you're going to decide McCain or Obama. Is there a decision that matters to people? And what would you suggest if you're in a swing state?
Well, I would suggest voting against McCain, which means voting for Obama without illusions, because all the elevated rhetoric about change and hope and so on will dissolve into standard centrist Democrat policies as soon as if he takes office. However, there is a difference, and it's been studied quite closely by political scientists. There's a strong difference over time. No, don't see it at any particular moment, but over time, the general population, the large majority of the population, other than the very wealthy, tends to do considerably better under Democratic than under Republican administrations. And the reason is sort of what you said. They reflect different elite constituencies. And the differences are quite striking and very noticeable. So if that's what matters to you, well, that's usually a pretty good guide for voting. It's not that the Democrats represent public opinion. They don't. In fact, like the Republicans, they're pretty well to the right of public opinion on a host of major issues, including those of most importance to the public. In fact, what's happening now, it's interesting, it's not being discussed, is very striking. It tells you a lot about American democracy. For years, decades, in fact, one of the leading concerns, if not the top concern of the public, has been the healthcare system, which is understandable. It's a total catastrophe. It has about twice the costs of other industrial countries and some of the worst outcomes. And it's painful for individuals. If you've ever spent a little time at an ER watching people come for prevent, you know, a bad cold, you can see what it's like.
We've been doing work in various states, in Northwest Indiana, in Virginia, and other places. It's all people want to talk about is the healthcare system.
Yeah,
jobs or healthcare.
And there's a good reason for it. It's a catastrophe. It's getting much worse. It's going to swamp the federal budget. And the fundamental reason for it is it's privatized. That introduces layer after layer of bureaucracy, cherry-picking, supervision, paperwork. And that's hundreds of millions of dollars of waste a year. Well, up until the 2004 election, it was just off the agenda. People mentioned the Clinton program, but that's misunderstanding. A program, what the public has wanted is very straightforward. They want a national health care system. Usually people pick Canada as the model, not because it's the best system, but because it's right there. You see it. You don't see the Australian system, which is better. The public, by large majorities, has favored a national health care system, say Medicare Plus, it's sometimes called, extended to the whole population, which would be far cheaper, far
more efficient. Now, Obama doesn't go there. Obama does not go there.
Well, see, it's quite interesting to see what's happened. Up until 2004, nobody went there. So the last debate before the election in 2004 was on the domestic economy and concerns. And now 2008 is different. In 2008, both Democratic candidates, Clinton and Obama, make proposals which, as you say, were not what the public wants, but were approaching it. Well, what happened between 2004 and 2008 to make it politically possible? Public opinion didn't change. What changed is that a major sector of concentrations of real power, namely manufacturing industry, they changed their position. So General Motors says that it costs them over $1,000 more to make a car in Detroit than across the border in Windsor, Canada, because of the inefficient healthcare system. Well, when a large sector of concentrated capital, concentrated economic power, becomes interested in something, it becomes politically possible. So now it's moving to the political agenda. They're not getting there. What does that tell you about the functioning of American democracy? It's very revealing, and it is doubly revealing that nobody comments on it.
What just to, in this segment of the interview, just to concentrate more on the political, the politics of this election, what do you say to the third party candidates who say they are all the same, and there really is that we're locked in this dilemma, they say, of one party or the other, the lesser of evils and such. What do you say to them when they say it really doesn't make any difference who wins?
To say it doesn't make any difference who wins is simply to express your contempt for the general population, because it does make a difference. A lot of what they say is correct. The two parties are effectively factions of one party, the business party. But the factions are somewhat different. And as I mentioned, over time, the differences show up in benefits, working conditions, wages, things that really matter to people. So yes, there's a difference. It's a narrow difference, and the spectrum within the political system is well to the right of popular opinion. Incidentally, the public is well aware of it. So 80% of the population say that the government is run by, I'm quoting, a few big interests looking out for themselves, not the population. And they're, you can argue about the details, but the picture is essentially correct and they don't like it. Nevertheless, there is some difference, and you have to make a choice. If you're in a swing state, you have to ask, is this difference enough for me to pick the lesser of the two evils? And there's nothing wrong with picking the lesser of two evils. I mean, cliche makes it sound like you're doing something bad, but no, you're doing something good if you pick the lesser of two evils. So is it worth doing that, or is it worth trying to act to create a potential alternative? For example, should I vote green because maybe someday their party building, there'll be a real alternative? Should I express my disdain for the right-wing orientation of both parties by not voting, let's say? Or should I pick the lesser of the two evils, thereby helping people? Okay, that's a decision people have to make.
In the next segment of our interview, let's talk about the current financial crisis. And what do people mean when they talk about the financial crisis and the real economy, as if they're two different planets? Please join us for the next segment of our interview with Professor Noam Chomsky.